Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Travis, are you excited about Undertaker versus Goldberg after what Undertaker just told us he's going to do to Goldberg's soul?
No.
Okay. I thought it was exactly what I expected it to be. I think if anybody expected anything, it doesn't mean you have to like it or not like it, but it was that promo by Undertaker at the end. It was long ring entrance. And then, you know, the platitudes that Undertaker says that felt more relevant back when there was a streak, back when he was full time, back when there was evidence he could still go in the ring. Goldberg's going to be on SmackDown tomorrow night. I ran a Twitter poll asking if people were interested in this match and how they felt. It was more negative than I would have guessed. I asked, what's your anticipation level? 56% said they're very much not interested. 21% indifferent, 17% mildly interested, and only 6% said very high. How about you?
Not even mildly interested.
Okay. So indifferent or very much not interested?
Very much not interested.
Gotcha. Okay. So you are with the majority, not just the number one vote getter out of four, but we have a true majority. That's not a plurality. That's actually the majority. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it affects things. The other thing they did to try to build up Super Showdown, but the kind of other special attraction match was Triple H and Randy Orton. Did they, you know, they had the video packages last week, I think maybe the week before, and then they talked about the size of Triple H's balls and did some stuff about fitting them into an overhead compartment, and then Triple H said Randy never had any, and Randy just sort of laughed at him. Did that work? I mean, given what they have to work with here, which is nothing is at stake?
Yeah, I was at the end of that. I was a tad bit confused, like, because it seemed as if Triple H and Orton were on the same page when Orton made the line about the balls, and that it was like, okay, that, like, all right, we're doing this hack,
yeah,
kind of thing. But by the end, it almost seemed like I assume it was just Triple H desperately trying to get back into character and have some seriousness to the whole thing. But I was like, wait, is he pissed off? Because Orton just kept, like, you know, like, the whole thing was a goof, and it kind of is. And Triple H tried, and I thought, and I wasn't sure if Triple H was trying to get back into character or if he was just genuinely, like, a little ticked off that Orton kept up the smirky kind of thing. But whatever. I mean, it would have taken a miracle for them to go on out there and done anything compelling, or not even compelling, because that was kind of compelling. I watched it with some interest. But that's kind of all you're going to get. It's just like, I wonder what these two guys could go out here and do and say, because they are still Triple H and Randy Orton.
I mean, that's part of the problem with building up a match like this, when it just feels so past its sell-by date. And, you know, Triple H can say, you know, don't let the suit fool you. Orton can talk about legend killing. But, I mean, that is about it. This was a tough hand that they're dealt when, you know, the Saudi crown prince wants to see this match and they're paying an ungodly amount of money to get it. So this is what, you know, they go out and do. You know, they kind of go through the motions and you know, at least make it look like they're trying. And I think that's what that was. But, yeah, I mean, those are the two kind of outside the box, outside the normal storyline angles that were done on Raw the week of Super Showdown. They had to do something, I would think. We'll see how Goldberg follows up. I think we can probably imagine what it will be and be pretty close to accurate. So we'll talk about the other content on the show. The show is built around primarily Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman claiming on social media that Brock Lesnar would cash in tonight. That was the big pitch to build ratings and build anticipation. High skepticism, rightfully so, among wrestling fans for this. I asked on Twitter about 800 votes in. WWE is advertising that Paul Heyman says Brock Lesnar will cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase tonight on Raw. Do you think Lesnar will wrestle Rollins tonight on Raw? 6% said yes, and he'll win the title. 3% said no, or yes, but he won't win the title. So 9% bought into it. 11 or 14% said no. He'll cash in, but the match will be later. So they were right, ding, ding, ding. And 77%, well, sort of. He left with a briefcase. So he didn't really cash it in. 77% said, no, it's a big ruse. And that's probably, I mean, in a way, that's probably closer than anything. Travis, do you feel that was a bait and switch? Or is everyone just a fool, buyer beware at this point when it comes to Lesnar and the Money in the Bank, even though WWE sort of called it breaking news and portrayed it as trustworthy?
I think where they, unless I missed it, and I don't think I did, a follow-up promo or kind of just the camera catching backstage Heyman and Lesnar leaving the building. And Paul's reiterating, like, I promised the McMahons that they were going to get a title match, and Brock, we're going to be, you know, there's going to be consequences, and he snaps and says, what are they going to do, fire me? You know, so showing, like, he doesn't care, and it was his fault, and it was his, you know, kind of, like, take the heat off the promotion, like, well, we wanted the match, y'all. Don't get mad at us. And I think that would have been fine. Like, it might not as fine if you didn't do this, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in a row. But I think if you do that, you know, that's okay. But they didn't do any kind of follow up, and that left it flat.
And the promotion did buy into it. You know, they promoted it in a way that, although the followers of PW Torch on Twitter did not buy into it. So maybe nobody did. But that's bad news, you know, because the promotion got behind it. The promotion did not indicate that they were not, that they were skeptical. Like, they didn't say, Paul Heyman says this, but we will believe it when we see it. They put that in the hands of Seth. And so they have this sort of out, but it's an out that I think in this era, people aren't buying that as an out. They see it as bait and switch. You're trying to fool the marks. And I think people are wise to it. Now, that doesn't mean they didn't tune in to watch it play out, but they can also resent WWE for seeming to get behind it in the way that they framed it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, well, let's set the table, introduce ourselves, and then move to the caller portion of the program. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, the Red Brand. And it is Monday, June 3rd, 2019. And I am Wade Keller, host of the program, joined by Travis Bryant from the PW Torch East Coast cast. Just search PW Torch, and we'll see the logo come up and subscribe to it. It's a weekly Wednesday show. We'll talk more detail about that later on. And coming up later, his East Coast cast co-host Cameron Hawkins will join us as the on-site correspondent from the University of Texas, Travis, right?
Yes.
Yes, we did get a big Austin postcard later, and what wrestler mentioned Austin specifically? Was it Becky? Someone mentioned Austin.
Well, Rollins and Miz in his introduction, and he set Rollins up to say, "Let's get weird," because Austin, keep Austin weird catchphrase.
Yeah. So anyway, they mentioned it enough. I won't read too much into it, but it's still weird. They put the graphic up for the university that they were at instead of the city. But they mentioned the city a few other times. I don't think they were as ashamed to be in Austin as they are some of the other non-NFL cities that Rob visits, where it's your
challenge. I wouldn't live in a city that WWE was like ashamed to say they were in when they come to town.
Really?
No, probably not, actually.
I was like, I think he's still in a joke, but I'm going to challenge him on this because there's a chance for him to, like, just shooting on me here. It's like, I would never live in a town that WWE wouldn't be proud to say, not because of WWE, but just because that's who you are. All right. So we are going to take phone calls, and we're going to start on that momentarily here. So if you want to get on the phone call conversation here, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you're just going to be in the background listening. We need you to push 1 to flag yourself as a caller who wants to be brought onto the air. That's 347-215-8558. You can also send us questions for the mailbag segment coming up after we talk to Cam in the on-site correspondent segment. And that email address is WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Travis, let's get right to phone calls. And we'll begin with area code 915. You are first up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Izzy from El Paso. How are you doing, Wade?
I'm doing good, Izzy. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Hey, Wade. Hey, Travis. How are you guys doing? I have two topics real quick. Number one, what's the point of the Women's Tag Team Championship?
Travis, what is the point of the Women's Tag Team Championship?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out right now. I love the Iconics. I love them. I think they're awesome. I think they're great on the bike. I don't know if you guys saw that video yesterday. They did. They just started walking around with everybody on the, with showing their shirts and all that. It was really good. It's really great. But what's the point of it? I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't get it.
So you're complaining mostly just because they aren't focusing on the tag belts at this point? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Well, are they doing anything with the Women's Tag Team Championships? That's what I'm thinking about. Like, there's nothing. There's a longing, reigning, defending champion, but I don't think they defended it once since WrestleMania. There's a problem with that.
No, they haven't. And they've even, every time they say that, or they have Corey Graves say that, they have one of the announcers mention that, you know, how about put those titles on the line? And they bring it up. They're not trying to run from it, so they're giving themselves some plausible deniability in that sense, if there's any needed. But they just aren't doing anything with it. And at this point, there is no point for those titles. I don't think they're giving the Iconics any kind of, like, just major kind of the thing you're talking about. I didn't see if it wasn't on TV. I didn't see it. I'm not going
there. It was on the WWE Network yesterday. It was great. They're just walking around. They talked to Roman Reigns. They talked to some other people. It was comedic. Sure. It was awesome. It was so funny. It was really good.
I understand that. I get that whole thing, but I didn't see it. I'm not going out of my way to see stuff that's not on the main product.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Vince McMahon isn't super enthusiastic about tag team titles in general, but I think fans had a right to have an expectation that it would be celebrated and treated as a big deal, especially given who won them initially and how they sold that victory. And now they have champions. And I mean, they're kind of, like Travis says, they're owning it. They're addressing it. They're not defending the titles. It, you know, can put it on Vince McMahon for not drawing enough attention to it. But obviously Vince is in a mode right now that where he's putting things on TV that he thinks will hold the audience and that matter. I'd be fine with him doing more with the tag team titles on main event and drawing attention to that fact that the Iconics, you know, every 2-3 weeks start defending the women's tag team titles on main event. They got nothing to lose if they do that. And at least then it would be a title with a home and a purpose. And they could have qualifying matches on that show, but it wouldn't have to be on a show where Vince fears it would lose viewership. I think he should have more confidence in the women's tag team titles, and part of that is on him for not building up challengers. But I mean, there is a middle ground. If his belief is they don't matter, nobody cares about him, and I'm resent that you guys talked me into introducing him, and I felt pressure because of the whole women's revolution thing, you know, then at least give it to main event and let them be on there a little more often there to have some sort of track record.
Okay, that's true. Well, I think they're great. I think they should be pushed more, in my opinion. Yeah. And I know they have to be great. I think they're great.
They're not the greatest in-ring wrestlers, but they're polarizing personalities. Some people like them. Some people don't want them on their screen. Some people find them entertaining in their kind of quirky, obnoxious, intentionally over-the-top, abrasive way. I think that if they weren't promoting Super Showdown right now and giving a segment to Undertaker, giving a segment to Lesnar, giving a segment to Orton and Triple H, maybe there would have been more room for the women's tag titles too. So let's start judging it next week, Izzy. I think, you know, we'll see if they maybe reintroduce it. I appreciate the call. Let's go next to area code 516. 516, you're up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Yep, this is Scott from Long Island. What's up, Wade? What's up, Trav?
Not too much. Thanks for calling, Scott. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, congratulations on the Moxley interview. I'm sure you got a lot of praise. It was great. I thought I could hear you cringe every time you dropped an F-bomb. It was fantastic. The editing process must have been so fun for you, Wade.
I was not cringing when he was dropping F-bombs. I'm not, you know, like, I'm not this delicate flower. But I knew that I would have to edit, but I wasn't dreading that because I wanted to go back and re-listen to it anyway. I was laughing. I mean, did we count? There were 12 in a 30-second span at one point. I mean,
during
it was great.
When you told the Brock story, it was nonstop.
Yeah. Oh, it was, yeah. So we put up the unbleeped version on the VIP site. We actually put up two versions. There were so many F-bombs, and I do know I hear from people. I know some people who were skeptical, but there are people who really do like to listen to this on their, you know, Bluetooth speakers in the kitchen or in the den or whatever, and the kids are around, and they don't want to hear 37 F. So we actually put up two versions for VIP members, so you can hear the unedited version as a VIP member. We had to put up the edited one on the free podcast because we're not marked as explicit. So, I mean, it was hard to – you know, find as many of them as we did to bleep. But no, I thought it was super entertaining. I mean, gratuitous, just saying it to be cool. That you know, it's like, oh, I can swear. I'm 12 now. Like that stuff. Just I roll my eyes at. I think you can, you know, express yourself in other ways. But that said, when you feel kind of passionate about something and you choose your moments,
37 times.
Yes. I mean, he was feeling it. So, I mean, but he also, you know, revealed that he watches This Is Us with his wife. So, I mean, it's like it all balances out in the end. But I was not cringy. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was great. He was just so freaking entertaining.
I have two quick things. First, that interview, for whatever, maybe it'll be long term or short term. I don't know. It kind of, between that and I called a few weeks ago, told you about my friend who's a writer telling me the same thing, and obviously everything, he confirmed everything, which, you know, it actually, I talked to my friend, all the writers listened to it, and I tried getting that line, the Roman line that he said he wouldn't tell Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he told you up there. I tried getting it, but they said they all knew the line, but they refused to tell me, so, you know, I tried getting it for you, but one of my friends, that he's like, on PG-13, it would have been bad. He's like, I would have been uncomfortable to that line on something rated R. When I heard that, I was like, wow. Like, it just makes me think. But the two things I have, it almost makes me watch this product with, like, a tainted view now of just, like, I watch the different guys, like, whoever's up. Like, you know, I'll see Cedric Alexander, whoever, and just know that everyone's creatively stifled. And I love that he brought up the writers and the producers. Like, he didn't want to screw up and screw off and mess around the last few months because he didn't want to get those guys fired because they're making, you know, some are making 60,000 set, whatever, you know, 70, whatever, okay living. Some are making more or less, whatever. But, like, he doesn't want to get those guys fired, and someone's going to get fired. And it's just like, you know, I think it was nice of him to bring that up because
that's something a lot of people are bringing up, is that it explains why wrestlers don't push back more on the scripting, because it's like if you do something wrong, this innocent over here is going to have their head chopped off. And, you know, the wrestlers are like, you know, as Dean said, you know, or John Moxley said, we you know, we're not worried about getting fired, but we don't want to get a writer fired over not obeying our boss's orders. And in the end, John was, you know, I thought John was honorable in the way that he explained how he handled it. He expressed himself. There was no mystery to his frustration. He made his case. He provided alternatives, but Vince paid the checks. He's the one who hires and fires. And in the end, he had final say. So, and then, you know, Dean would go out there and do the best he could. And I think he did almost to, I wouldn't say to a fault, but to a fault in the sense that there were people who thought he was okay with it because he so went all in on it when he did it. Because he didn't try to, sandbag. He didn't try to sabotage it. He really went out and did a good job with the things he was given, even if people were kind of cringing or thinking it wasn't best for him. But, I mean, yeah, if people don't know what we're talking about, over on the Blue Brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, this weekend we featured a special two-part, nearly 2.5-hour interview with Dean Ambrose. It's 7 hours if you count my introductions to orient new listeners to what we do here. But the 2.5 hours of Dean's interview are available right now on iTunes. We actually are two of the top, like, 16 podcasts right now in Apple Podcast rankings in terms of episodes. We've been in the top 5 for subscriptions in the last a couple days on Apple Podcasts, Chris Jericho's show, which featured Moxley on Wednesday, and then my show from Saturday and Sunday, are 5 of the top sports podcasts, and all of everything going on with the NBA and everything. We're 2 of the top 5 podcasts right now.
Congratulations,
so it's gained
that's
traction.
Awesome. You deserve it.
Yeah. So if you missed out somehow, listen, like, I don't need to do a hard sell. Just go on our Twitter pages and look.
I'll do the sell. Everyone, listen to this podcast. It's a necessity. Listen right after you listen to this. There you go.
All right, cool. Listening to this and go check that out and then come back to us. We don't care. Either way.
Yeah, that's
ahead.
Fine. Podcasts are cool that way. I think the Firefly Funhouse is the wackiest it's been since it debuted. And it
makes you think
the Moxley thing. Now Vince is like, "Oh, that's good. Let me make it. Let, I'm going to be a character in it now." And it's like, I could almost see like him being like, "Oh, this is the thing that's getting over. So now I'm going to be a part of it because I'm the guy." And that's what I mean by it's almost like tainted for me. Now I just look at it like everything that everyone's talking about, everything going through Vince and all the writers and producers and everything, it just makes me look at it at a different level. And like, it was wacky and it was good and I'm enjoying it, but knowing that Vince has his hands so, and like, this is never going to happen, never going to happen. But if the XFL ever succeeded, which, my God, I wouldn't even put
Scott,
a dollar
Scott,
on
I got it.
But, yeah.
Scott, I got to jump in. Of all our callers, you have the worst phone connection. So I don't know if you can improve that by talking more in the mic or getting a better spot, but you're just, it's starting to become hard to understand. So I can kind of jump in to let you know that. I'd like to hear what you're saying, so I don't know if you can improve that in any way. But, and that's for future, you know, future reference.
No,
we didn't even hear what you just said there. All right, I'll put you on hold. Travis, Firefly Funhouse's episode. What do you think of exercising Bray Wyatt? I assume that was a Pete Rose doll. I mean, it sure looked like him.
Wait, the big? Jeez.
No. The other guy who came to the door. It looked exactly like Pete Rose, Hall of Famer.
Oh, wait. No. Even more scoff. Wait, no.
Oh, that totally looked like Pete Rose. Who was it?
It was Vince.
Oh, was that supposed to be Vince? It totally looked like Pete Rose to me.
Oh, my goodness, Wade. Yeah, you might have missed an entire, like, part of the context of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Explain what I missed out on then, what the context
was. Well, Vince was there telling him, you know, you both better get your act together. And he's like, he's talking to him and Huskus, the pig, you know, him as Husky Hair, you know, him.
Oh, gosh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Did you understand that the pig was supposed to
be? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. I don't know now.
I thought it was super – no, that's fine. You're fair enough. I thought it was super weird because you're talking about, I was husky in the day and then wink, wink at the camera and all that. But what go ahead.
So it was Vince. So everything that was said by the doll with the horns, the evil boss, he even said, "Sorry, boss," or "I promise, boss, we'll get our act together." It was just I'm not sure if he said there was a line that changes the whole thing, but I think just that being Vince like changes the whole thing, like if you watch it again.
Yeah, totally. Okay. I always have to rewatch them anyway, so so what do you think overall? I mean, what do you think of the
it was fine. I mean, it was probably one of the better ones. I still don't, I mean, it was fine as an ongoing. Like, if this was a sketch that they did on Edge and Christian, this would be great. This would be so good because it'd just be a reoccurring thing that they did over 8 or 10 episodes, and it would be and it would tell its own story within the show. But how does this lead to any kind of wrestling? And once it gets to the wrestling, the Funhouse stuff is over. Is he going to have an interview segment in the ring and try to rebuild the Funhouse in the ring with props and dolls and stuff to do interviews to lead to something? I don't. So again, in a vacuum, it's fine. It's like creative and I understand it and it's funny and winking at you in certain ways that I get. But beyond that, I'm like, okay, what now? I keep saying that after every episode.
But do we need to know yet? Or, I mean, like, I don't feel I need to know in order to have at least some hope
Okay, hope. But how can it logically lead to something that's going to have Bray in the ring wrestling and fighting for something?
Yeah.
Over something.
Yeah. I mean,
and he's obviously a bad guy. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a babyface.
Right, so where do you, I mean, what is the best case scenario for this in terms of his character? Like, what do you predict they're building up here and where it's going?
I have no idea because it's in a lot of ways one of the, it's purposely so, the weirdest things, you know, that they could do. So I can't predict where this nonsense is going to go. And to me, that's what it is. It's just nonsense because it doesn't belong. It just feels out of place.
What, would you feel better if there was more of a context provided, or is that not really the issue? It's just
that might make it worse.
Yeah.
Like them pretending like, what the hell was that? And especially in the beginning, like, all right, we don't know. Bray sent us in this tape and we played it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, the closer you bring it to the company and having it be a thing, I think not weirder, but the even more of a just fakey, phony kind of thing it becomes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if anyone listening has thoughts on Firefly Funhouse so far, you can
people like it. People that I know with
totally. Sense, yeah.
That I respect their taste. They're like, oh, this is amazing. And it's like,
it's the most. But it's really interesting. It's really well done for what it's attempting to do. You're being paid off for paying attention or rewatching or going on social media and seeing what clues Bray's leaving out there. It's callbacks to the past. Well, there are people doing that who like it. And Vince and then so
those were available. Maybe I will now.
Oh, if you look at Bray, he's been on his social media like reacting to him and kind of laying out clues and stuff. I haven't followed it closely, but I know people are and they're enjoying that. There are callbacks to things that normally Vince McMahon acts like or says, you know, nobody remembers that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're getting that. And so they're building up this foundation of who Bray was and the Vince McMahon doll yelling at him for his husky former self. And then you have all these other characters that play into the original Bray Wyatt persona. I think people are waiting for this to come into focus. It's like staring at one of those paintings where you have to look really long and then
you have to look beyond it.
Yeah, you have to look beyond it, and then it comes into focus. I think that's how people look at these. They're seeing this.
So wait. So am I, or people that don't particularly like or appreciate it, especially in the context of a wrestling show, the guy at the mall kiosk, like, I don't see it. And everybody around him's like, whoa.
kind of.
I don't see it. Like, what are you doing? Like, what's wrong with my eyes?
I mean, kind of, but even if you saw it, it doesn't mean you have to like it. I mean, this is very outside the normal bounds.
I
look fine. I mean, when I hear the music, I'm like,
this makes me think of something. Does Vince not understand like the idea of callbacks and how special they are to storytelling in every form? Does he like stand-up comedians? Like when they call back to something they said in the 12-minute mark, 45 minutes later, and an hour-long set or something like that, and it's really good, especially if it hits and the joke's good. One of my favorite animated shows, regular show, I think it's one of the greatest shows ever written because over the course of 7 seasons, their callback game was just spectacular. And does he just not grasp or – I mean, I think it's been demonstrated over the years. He doesn't think it's important. Like, people will never remember. But it is just such an important part of storytelling that when done right, it's just, man.
What was
I
totally agree. Yeah. What was the point of the dancing? What's that a tie into?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was just more trying to be, you know, that kind of genre of what a kid's show would kind of do, and they do.
Okay.
They dance all the time.
And you know, what I like is when, you know, there's the mood, it's cheerful, it's upbeat, kind of creepy, but still, you know, all that. And then all of a sudden, there's just that little subliminal, you know, now erase your mind. And then he goes.
Like 1 week, they just – overdid it. They just ring. Shows kept cutting to weird scenes. I was just like, oh, you know, my head hurts because you hit me over the head with it so much. But this weekend, it was nice. Just boom, and then we're done. And the week before, what was the one when he did his walk? I love how they reincorporated that.
The limbo time. It was limbo time or whatever. Yeah.
That was cool.
Well, for hating it, you're good.
Oh, shit.
All right. Scott, if we can hear you, thanks for your call. Anything else you want to close with?
Yeah, can you hear me better now? I think you can, probably.
Look,
Yeah. I mean, you've like completely faded it down there. So
different parts of my house, just whatever. But yeah, I'll leave you with, you know what, Trav, you said something like you don't like it for a wrestling show. It's not a wrestling show. It's a sports entertainment show. And that's what I'm saying. Like, now I could have seen them shooting all those vignettes up to like the Mask debut and then them shooting the rest and Vince being like, oh, this is getting over. So now I'm going to be a character in this thing and I'm going to portray myself. And now I'm going to get my hands in it because of Moxley's interview and everything everyone thought. So I'm watching everything they're doing tainted. Like, it's changing the way I'm watching the product. And I'm wondering if you guys feel that at all after that interview and stuff.
Nothing that Moxley said in a broad kind of macro sense surprised me. It was like a paint by numbers. You can see the outlines. He filled in all this colorful detail, all these firsthand stories. But I mean, from talking to all, you know, however many dozen creative team member interviews I've done, over 100 of them over the years with, you know, dozen or two dozen people who work there. I mean, I got, you know, similar stories from them, and we've interviewed a lot of wrestlers who have dealt with a lot of similar frustrations. So, I mean, Moxley's really is entertaining and his frustration level with what he wanted to do and what he was forced to do. The contrast was so strong, and after years of people watching it, I mean, it's hitting people, and I understand why. It's like, oh my God. But I don't think anything like, if you follow shows like this and our interviews and you follow online, I mean, I don't know, Travis, nothing that Moxley said was like, I didn't know that's how things work back there. It was just another example and one of the best examples of a talent being frustrated with that system and then adding some details to it.
Yeah, it just hit. It was that final kind of, I don't say nail in the coffin kind of thing. It's not really that major, but it was just that final like, kind of code of credibility for sure. Yeah. Like the writers and other wrestlers, they're credible, but this is just another level of credibility that if you didn't believe it, then you're absolutely going out of your way to not understand how things work.
Right. Yeah. Scott, any quick closing words from you?
No, yeah. I was just going to say, everything just got verified, and that just changes the way I view the product, and that's scary for guys like, name them, Cesaro or Rollins or whatever, whoever, just like anyone but Brock. You know, I hate the part that struck me, oh, Brock, he flew in the night before, let's just do this, that'll be fine, getting in the ring with me is enough. That, like, changes the way I enjoy the product. So if AEW does well, then this is going to be a groundbreaking two interviews, and I'm glad that you got one where he said, you know, the final purge of WWE. So congratulations, and my phone service, I apologize. Blame AT&T, and I'll talk to you guys another time.
Little dig at AT&T there in the end. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. I mean, the Lesnar story, I think, is going to cause people who – I don't know. I mean, to me, the Lesnar was, again, not surprising, but it confirmed the worst part of the range that you had in terms of how you looked at Lesnar, in terms of how much he is just sort of, you know, in it for himself and doesn't care, and it kind of has a disregard for what's going on around him. That's the impression you get from Moxley's side of things. Lesnar and Heyman may have their side of things, but I mean, people watched that and were perplexed that it should have been better and it wasn't. And John Moxley laid out in excruciating details. It was excruciating for him as someone who wanted that to be so much more, to have it be what it was. And so it was painful. You could feel his pain in reliving it. And I think people will look at Lesnar a little bit different, as opposed to, well, it's just him playing a role and trying to get heel heat. This is sort of like, no, he's a guy who is messing around with other people and things that should be better.
Yes.
All right, cool. All right, let's go next to, I believe it's a Skype call. We're seeing all ones. If you heard a beep, it's you. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. If you're on hold, just say your name. We'll confirm it to you. Okay, if you just got hung up on, it was you, and you should have said your name when I asked. All right, call back. All right, 217, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Go ahead, 217. Well, now I feel bad about the last guy. 2.7, are you there? I don't know what's going on. This never happens. All right, maybe someone fell asleep. We'll go for three in a row here. We'll go to 609. Are you there, 609? Can you hear us?
Jersey. I am actually here, yes.
Wow, awesome. Okay, great. Please state your name. Are you from Jersey?
Yes, Mike from Jersey.
All right, cool. Thanks, Mike. What's on your mind tonight?
You know, first off, Wade, congrats for the Moxley interview.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Now, I'm trying to figure out, is there different podcasts to listen to? Like, Jericho did one and you did one, both separate, right?
Yeah. Jericho interviewed him before Double or Nothing, actually, and it dropped last Wednesday. And then I interviewed him Wednesday night, and then we released it Saturday, part one and two for VIP members, part one for non-VIP members, and then Sunday night we released part two. So it's all on the Blue Brand. And so there's three interviews, three segments total, one Jericho that Jericho did, and then a two-parter that was almost twice as long that I did.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't listen to any of that. I got to check it out then. So I guess I got about 6 hours worth, huh? All right, cool. Yeah, check it out.
Well, let's see. No, probably four hours total.
About 4 hours total? Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on the Taker-Goldberg match for Friday.
Yeah.
That's one of the matches I'm most looking forward to, actually, because I'm such a big Undertaker fan and pretty decent fan of Goldberg. But, you know, everyone's got to realize not everything has to be a five-star classic. Like, yeah, it's not going to be the greatest wrestling match, but the allure there is, you know, I mean, yeah, there's no story, but there's still the allure of, like, what's the finish going to be? You got the tombstone going against the spear, you know, and Goldberg, his matches with Lesnar, they were good for what they were. You know, Goldberg, you know, short and sweet. You know, Goldberg and Lesnar did their thing, and sometimes Taker can go, sometimes he can't. So these guys might get, like, 8 solid minutes, and it might be a pretty decent match. And I just don't know who's going to go over. Who do you guys predict? You got Taker or you got Goldberg?
Yeah, good question. What do you think, Travis? What's the finish of this one?
Yeah, I'm going to go Undertaker just because if all things are equal, he's obviously been there 29 years as they put over, and Goldberg just doesn't have the WWE standing. So if it's like, well, stolen by seniority and all those kinds of credentials, I just think Undertaker wins it. Maybe Goldberg gets a visual pinfall, and there's like
I could see Goldberg being somebody who would not want to lose. Like, I think he's somebody who, I mean, maybe I can be proven wrong, but like, and not that he, you know, for the right price. And it's,
well, his family and all that aren't there. He doesn't, you know, but he got all that out of his system three years ago, whenever. So I don't want to hear that as far as like a finish. Like, we're going to do the finish we want to do. If that means Undertaker goes over, that means Undertaker goes over. I don't want to do, like, come on. Like, get out of here. $3 million.
I'm not saying he should have any sway in how he feels about it, but I'm saying he I could see him, you know, being grumpy faced, which is ridiculous. But I could be wrong. But I also think there's a really good chance they have a battle, and then Baron Corbin and the Revival run to the ring, or whoever. You know, it's just like it turns into a double count-out thing, and then Undertaker and Goldberg do their finishers together to two heels. You know, pick whatever, Lashley and Braun, you know, and Lashley and Baron Corbin, and they attack him, and then it's just a happy ending, and they stand side by side, and they never address the finish. There is no finish, and, you know, nobody cares because we got to see Undertaker and Goldberg as a team fend off two heels. I would think that's as likely as an actual tombstone 1-2-3.
Yeah, now that I actually don't want to see. I'd rather have a – I hope we get a clean finish. If it's only going to be the one match, I hope we get a winner. The way Taker, I found it interesting.
There's no way Goldberg wins. I'll just say that.
I got to agree. I'm going with Taker, too. The way Taker addressed it, you know, for Goldberg to bring his best and everything, like, there might be another match down the road, but, you know, we'll see. But I found that interesting. Didn't you, Wade?
I think this is a one-off. I really do. I don't think we'll see another.
I hope it's the one though.
If they have a better than expected match and they, you know, and Taker feels good and they decide, let's bring it to America. I mean, I'm not going to say 100% no, but it would be.
Jeddah's not in America?
No.
It's Jeddah. I just assumed it was like Jeddah, Mississippi.
It's at the University of Jeddah. Yeah. All right, Mike, anything else for us?
That's all, Wade. Thank you.
Cool. All right, cool. Appreciate your call. All right, well, try 217, I think, again. 217, are you there, Sam?
Hey, this is Larry from Beardstown. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Larry. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, it's ironic you guys were just talking about the Goldberg Undertaker match at the Saudi Arabia Showdown. Is it me, or does there not seem to be as much interest in this match as maybe there should be?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't. Should there be?
I was about to say, what does that mean? Should be? Why should there be?
It comes across to me as something that's about 15 years too late.
Well, that's answering your question. Yes, I mean, that's why. I mean, if that's what you're getting at, this match should have been huge, and it would have been if it happened 15 years ago. But it is a dream match 15 years too late, and it's happening because there's a ton of money being thrown at it from a foreign regime with a ton of money to throw at dream matches, and that's what has lured them into having this match. I mean, it's that simple. It is not a match the fans demanded. I don't know if WWE.com ran a poll, if it would be as lopsided as ours, but, you know, 55% saying they're very much not interested in this match. Only 7% said they're highly interested in this match. It's sad. But there are boxers who have fought well past their freshness date, and it's been sad to watch. In team sports, it doesn't happen as much because you drag down your team. If you can't go anymore and there's not money in it for the team to hire you, but for single performers in, you know, sports, rock concerts. You see guys who are like, oh God, you know, kind of wish I had my memory untainted by this performance. And that's what I fear will happen Friday for these two. But you know, it's an iconic match for Saudi Arabia.
So it'd be, I just have this feeling it's going to be kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good way to put it as a classic rock fan. Expecting to see or thinking, yeah, I bet this, like seeing 38 special, yeah, it would have been great 30 years ago, but what's left of it now is just kind of there. And how long do you think, or do you have any idea, or want to take a guess at how long do you think the match will actually go?
What's your over-under, Travis?
6 minutes?
Yeah, I was going to say seven, so I'll take over on six, but not by much.
I was going to guess about five.
Where is it on the card? Is it the main event? Or?
No. Well, I don't know. I guess I don't think so.
Wouldn't technically the Lesnar... What is officially the main event of the card?
What does he mean? He said Friday, so that means Seth's got to face Corbin and then get cashed in on or potentially cashed in on or... have a whole nother match, you know, however they do it. Because the match for Corbin's still on. That's happening. So Seth's going into the match after a stretcher job to fight, to face a guy, two guys, back essentially. So,
yeah.
I don't think that's the main thing. I think Undertaker Goldberg.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't rule it out. I guess it depends on the finish. If it's a main event, maybe Undertaker pins Goldberg Tombstone and then they have heels run out and they have a feel good ending. But honestly, I mean, I haven't given a ton of thought to it. Triple H and Randy are going to main event, and they're going to go 40 minutes. I mean, what are we doing? And Triple H is going to go in thinking he's doing everyone a huge favor. Why are we even discussing this? All right, Larry, anything else we got over under our on-site correspondent? He's getting very impatient.
I agree with you on the Firefly Funhouse night. That was borderline goofy weird tonight.
Yeah.
But I heard the Pete Rose thing, and I can see where just for a couple of seconds you'd think it was Pete Rose, but when he called him Bob, that kicked into my head. It was like, that's it.
Yeah.
But I guess we're all going to see what they do with it next week. I don't want to take any more of your guys' time. You want to get to your correspondent. Thanks, as always, for taking the call, letting me be a part of the show.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate you being part of the show.
So,
thanks for listening.
So wait, before we go off the live call portion, do you think there is a I described it on the East Coast.
Travis won't stop talking. Sorry. Okay, go ahead. I'm just messaging him.
I described it on the East Coast Cast as a teenager who realizes, like, wait, like, my parents can't, like, physically dominate me anymore. Like, maybe it's time to, like, puff out my chest. Because there are wrestlers, not even all main event wrestlers, but most of them, but they're mostly main event wrestlers that are getting real sassy on social media. And I just don't think because of reasons, they're just not afraid. I mean, whatever you think of this Sami Zayn AEW comment on last week's Raw.
We didn't see him tonight.
We sure didn't.
They're selling that.
And but Becky, when the venue that was doing an autograph signing said, tweeted from their Twitter account, good news, folks, the Becky Lynch autograph signing and meet and greet or whatever we're having this weekend is extended by an hour and a half. So 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. come out and, you know, do the deal. And Becky quote tweets that and goes, oh, a 6-hour event, or as WWE calls it, a short pay-per-view. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
These are, like, they're getting their digs in various places, various wrestlers, and it's and I'm just like, what a different little competition makes.
Totally. I mean, I think it'll lead to a better product, and I think if Vince can – your analogy about a teenager, or it's like a kid in school realizing, the teacher has limited powers. You know, if I get kicked out of school, so what? You know, more time to do this or that. So, I mean, there is a little bit of –
But like with the Bray and the Bray segment, I'm not sure if that's necessarily Vince going, I want to be a part of this and try to fuck it in.
Yeah, but I mean – I'm hesitant to tie anything that goes on the Firefly Funhouse to some sort of rebellion by wrestlers against WWE in the way of things. I think that would be happening either way. I think the social media sassiness and, you know, basically wrestlers going, if they fire me, whatever. You know, I mean, I think there is some of that. I mean, some it's I just need the checks to clear and I'm fine. And like John Moxley said, it's fine if people just want to go and collect paychecks, you know, but that's not him. He's not just there to collect paychecks. That's he has, as he said, it was great. He's like, I didn't even look at the last offer they gave me, but I imagined, what if it's $10 million? He's like, what am I going to do with $10 million? It's going to make up for how effing miserable I am. I want to go express myself. I love professional wrestling, and I hate my job, and I lose sleep. I dread getting out of bed in the morning. Money, there's no materialistic thing that will make me happier than being an artist with freedom. But not everybody's like that. Some people are like, I just want to show up and get paid, and I'll do what I'm told to get paid, and I don't care if it works or not because it's above my pay grade to worry about that stuff. So that's where we are now, and I think we could see more of it, or WWE might clamp down on it, but I competition's good. Competition's good, period. You know, so except for freeways, I think it's good. There's like, you know, a freeway that gets built for everybody. I don't think there should be two next to each other, and then, you know, you drive on the one that's best. I mean, there's times to just have one thing, but you know, when it comes to professional wrestling, I think it's nice that there's a legit, well-funded national source that can give wrestlers more of a sense of just empowerment than they've had for a very long time. And this is where some karma and the flaunting of it comes back to haunt WWE a little bit, if not more.
Yeah. I think the poors should get whatever highway we give them.
Well, yes. All right. That can be your bumper sticker when you run for office. I'll look forward to that. Those would be great commercials. I'd want to see what the opposition would run opposite of you, Travis, commercials with all your podcasting over the years. All right. We're going to go to Cameron Hawkins and talk to him about what it was like in the building, and then we will answer your email. So contribute to the mailbag just sent to Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too, every day at